The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. Very welcome along to another week of the 9 till noon show. How are you keeping? How was your weekend? How did it go? Let us know. If you want to talk about anything on the show today, get in touch. I'll give you the numbers now in a second. Pass on some information. Maybe you need us to work on something for you. Whatever it might be, 086 6020 5000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 6020 5000. You can give us a call too on 074 91 25000. We have Caroline and Niamh taking your calls as usual. And if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. Right, a lot happened over the weekend. It was a busy one, wasn't it? I mean, there was that whole situation in Russia where it seemed like everything was going to change forever, and then it all of a sudden didn't change. But that all's still rumbling on. Lots of people interested in that. We'll have an expert on such matters joining us a little later on in the programme. And I kind of flagged how that I thought this RTE story, I thought it was going to be a big one. I never expected it to be quite as big as it actually is, even though I knew it was going to make an awful lot of headlines. It is across all the papers, all the shows, all weekend, and it continues this morning. We'll be talking about that a little later on as well. Your views, as I say, as the morning progresses, are encouraged, nay demanded. Right, let's see what's making the front of the paper. Good news story from the Donegal News this morning. A Scottish-based IT company will open a new base in Gwydir tomorrow as a major recruitment campaign gets underway. Be positive. Employ over 50 people in their Scottish base and is now in the early stages of setting up an office in GTEC. A recruitment campaign is in progress for their Donegal office in the heart of the Gaeltacht. The company has said that the number of jobs created will be linked to the success of that campaign. On to the Derry News this morning. No out-of-hours dental pain clinic in Western Trust. The Western Trust had the lowest number of dental practices and dentists per 100,000 people in the north in 2023. There was a 10.4% drop in the number of dental practices in the Western Trust per 100,000 people between 2014 and 2023. This was the second biggest drop of all the trusts and was significantly bigger than the north's 8.7% average. Right, on to the Nationals. And as I say, you'd struggle to find anything other than the Ryan Tuberty pay controversy on the front of the pages and inside it for that matter. Opinion pieces, 7 or 8 pages dedicated to it in most papers. The Irish Independent this morning, the knives are out among furious staff in RTE as they demand answers this week from suspended Director General Dee Forbes and other members of the station's executive. Ms Forbes is among a number of key RTE figures who have been invited before the two Oireachtas committees this week as the scandal surrounding hidden RTE payments continues to unfold. And lo and behold, as was is the norm, and we were talking about this last week as it relates to trying to get into the bottom of scandals in the HSC and other organisations in this state, Dee Forbes has now tendered her resignation, so she is no longer obliged to appear before those two Oireachtas committees. Now, I don't know what that means or if there's any consequences for her severance package that she would have got, presumably for standing down. But she has jacked it in. She was due to finish in a couple of weeks anyway. But now that she has, and in fairness, she had a big shot at the board of RTE on her way out. But now that she's resigned this morning, she no longer is compelled to answer questions in front of these Oireachtas committees. But I'll read on here. There is huge anger both within RTE and among the public at large as the fallout continues from the €340,000 in hidden payments to presenter Ryan Tuberty. The issue of corporate governance at RTE will be discussed at the Oireachtas Media Committee on Wednesday, followed by the Public Accounts Committee on Thursday. There is no indication yet whether Ms Forbes will attend the meetings, though, as I say, she's resigned this morning, so doesn't have to. When asked to clarify if she would be there, an RTE spokesperson was not in a position to elaborate. Notification of invitations to both committees have been received. RTE will be attending, the spokesperson said, but as I say, Dee Forbes no longer obliged to do so, or even really might no longer feel compelled to do so. As I say, The coverage continues in the Irish Daily Mail. RTE told agent to the Stars Noel Kelly to send invoices to a UK registered company in order to siphon the hidden payments to his client Ryan Tuberty. The national broadcaster arranged for the creation of invoices labelled as consultancy services, which were then sent to and settled by the British media firm Astus last year. So this is not simply a case of going to a third party company and saying, look, will you enter into an arrangement yourselves with Ryan Tuberty? Because we've said that we'll cut his pay. He wants to maintain his pay levels. So to keep it off the books, you know, Renault Ireland, will you pay him directly €75 and you'll get such and such in return? It was more than that, because invoices were created purposely, it would seem, to hide the money. Mr. Tuberty's name was not included, by the way, on any paperwork or payments in the barter relationship between the two entities. It emerged yesterday that Mr. Kelly sent the invoices to RTE, which forwarded them to Astus. The payments were processed at a total cost of €230,000. Tuberty's €150,000 top-up payment were in lieu of the money Renault was supposed to pay as part of the commercial deal with the presenter in exchange for a number of appearances. However, the car manufacturer pulled out of the deal, which meant RTE had to foot the bill because they underwrit it. And they said, effectively, if Renault don't pay you the money, we will. Now, the invoices that Astus received were for €75,000 for 2 years. That's 21 and 22. But they did not refer to Mr. Tuberty or his company, Tuttle Productions. It was reported that was an explicit instruction by RTE to anonymise the transactions and use no names. So purposely, these payments, and this is your money, by the way, this money was purposely hidden. They were told expressly, do not put anybody's name on this on these invoices. And there you go. All right, the Irish Times this morning. Kyiv and Washington have said Ukraine's counteroffensive against Moscow's invasion force can exploit the turmoil caused in Russia by the Wagner mercenary group's brief revolt and the cracks it exposed in the Kremlin's authority. Wagner fighters seized the major southern Russian city of Rostov on Saturday and then set off to convoy towards Moscow. It was really quite remarkable. So they'd been planning this seemingly for months. They built up along the Ukraine-Russian border. This group of fighters, and this is the level of defences that Russia has, they were able to just go in without a bullet being fired and take over Rostov. Then you had Vladimir Putin, if you weren't aware, going on the TV, state media in the morning saying, you know, this is an insurrection, or this is a knife in the back. This is these people are going to be arrested. They're breaking the law, calling for sticks, heads on sticks and all that kind of stuff. But nonetheless, the Wagner fighters then left Rostov, headed up the M4 and were just outside Moscow. And then lo and behold, something changed. Wagner's leader, he's fleeing the country. Some of the troops are going to be absorbed into the Russian army, but still many, many people believe that this is far from over. Well, Wagner fighters, as I mentioned, seized the major southern Russian city of Rostov on Saturday and then set off in convoy towards Moscow, smashing through barricades and shooting down several military aircraft as panicked authorities dug trenches across major highways to stop their advance. The mercenaries went back to base after a deal was agreed that neither they nor leader Yevgeny Prigozhin would face charges and he would go into exile in Belarus. But as I say, it doesn't and still doesn't make sense because much of the Russian army seemed to have thought what the Wagner crew were doing was the right thing to do. As I say, it's far from over, that situation, but we'll have an analysis of it for you a little later on in the programme if you want your view. 086 60 25,000. This is a strange one in the Sun today. It's elsewhere as well. An eco group, so that's an environmental friendly, loving group. An eco group is terrifying SUV drivers by using lentils to deflate their tyres. The tyre extinguishers are on the prowl in posh South Dublin in a bid to get gas guzzlers off the streets in urban areas. Warning, don't take it personally. The group carried out a series of coordinated global actions against huge vehicles that pollute our air, destroy our climate and make our cities unsafe. And they claim to have deflated 30 SUVs in Dunleary last weekend using lentils. The small bean is pushed inside the valve the cap, and then when it's replaced, air, so in other words, you screw the cap, it presses against the valve and deflates the tyres. Air hisses out as the lentil pushes down on the pin. A note was left by the group that read, "We have deflated one or more of your tyres. You'll be angry, but don't take it personally. It's not you, it's your car. We did this because driving around urban areas in your massive vehicle has huge consequences for others." Now, does anyone out there support their actions? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApp or texts. Well, if you get out of the car, you might get onto the bike, but it is a dangerous enough activity. According to latest statistics, the Mirror tells us that almost 1,400 people were hospitalised as a result of cycling crashes last year. According to details released under the Freedom of Information Act, 367 of those injured cyclists were under the age of 19. The figures obtained by the Mirror also reveal how 80 were aged over 70. They had inpatient admissions in HSE hospitals. Keen cyclist Kieran Cannon was knocked off his bike by an SUV at Moycullen, County Galway in July 2021 and is interviewed off the back of that. But 14,000 cyclists hospitalised in a single year right across the country, apparently. And finally, maybe it's a case of lucky you, but there's millions of you, or a million of you. The Great Exodus has begun, with over 1 million people expected to head off on sun holidays in the coming days. Now, again, this is a question based on what we might feel anecdotally, but are there as many tourists around? Do you think more people now, because we're post-COVID, apparently there's a few quid knocking about the place, that more people are going on foreign holidays? I wonder, is that being seen in the tourist hotspots around the Northwest, that less people are about because they're choosing to fly elsewhere? Let us know if that's what you're seeing. 086 60 25,000. Well, over a million people, as I mentioned, expected to head off on sun holidays in the coming days, and those leaving the country picked a good time to go, as forecasters are predicting a week of unsettled weather with plenty of rain and even isolated thunderstorms. It emerged yesterday, more than 1 million passengers will pass through Dublin Airport over the next 10 days. That being said, many of those aren't going on holidays. You know, they're going to popping over somewhere, or indeed probably leaving the country, having been here already on their own holidays. But look, at we'll round it up to a million. Dublin Airport reminded passengers due to fly out to be in their terminal 2 hours before a short-haul flight and 3 hours prior to a long-haul departure. But if you are going away on holidays, I'm not in any way bitter. Have a safe travels. Enjoy yourself. Don't overdo it on the first night and ruin the rest of the holiday. Take your time. Enjoy it. Okay. Let us know where you're going. 086 60 25,000. Good morning, Hugo. Listening or watching us in Wexford on Facebook. John, Charlie, Paul and Rosemary, you're very welcome along watching the 9 till noon show. And just a reminder for you that you can watch this program every day, 9 till 12, on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, across our Facebook channels, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. Why am I saying that? Highland Radio News and Sport are on Twitter. Right, okay. Conor Hogan of Eyeball, that's Irish Business Against Litters, on the show now. Good morning to you, Conor.
Good morning.
Right, okay. Letterkenny's mixed fortunes for it in the latest survey. It is down the rankings, but is still considered clean.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Kilkenny, Letterkenny really hit the heights last year, finished in sixth position in our ranking of 40 towns and cities. This morning it's down to 21st, but I should say it is still clean, and that is the main thing. And I suppose the other good news is that there was only one heavily littered site in the town. That was Letterkenny bus station. Very unusual, actually, to find a bus or train station in such bad condition. Other than that, there were just a number of sites that failed to hit the top litter grade. The Dunfanaghy Approach Road, Letterkenny Shopping Centre Park. Ontashka inspector says with a little effort, cleanliness could easily be achieved in these areas. Lots of good areas, of course. The recycle facility at Bryson Recycle was a grade A. There was the Kiltoy Approach Road was grade A. Donegal County Museum, a grade B plus, so pretty good as well. So the Upper Main Street was a grade B plus. So, you know, nothing really bad, but just a general presence of litter that brought it down the rankings.
Yeah, and I know Letterkenny bus station has been signalled out, but at the front it was grand. Your inspector had to dig around a little bit to find the faults, didn't he?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I'm not there myself, and I don't know, but I presume this must be pretty evident, this litter, for it to be picked up by our inspector. He talks about alcohol cans and sweet papers, fast food wrappers, promotional flyers and glass bottles. And the comment was made, it looked like a thorough cleaning had not taken place in some time. So that's something that's probably relatively easily fixed and not a problem we've had with the bus station in the past. Mm-hmm. That would see Kilkenny go back up the rank.
Letterkenny, yeah, indeed. Is there a series of visits? Is it one-off visit? Now, I do note that you did say that the inspector's conclusion was is that this is an area that hadn't been cleaned for some time. But generally speaking, is it one visit, Connor? Is it on the day? How do your inspectors
they're tasked with visiting the town at least twice a year. And they're also advised that if there's anything exceptional taking place, like a fair or some sort of a sports event or something, that it should be avoided. So they're asked to deliver a representative picture of the town, but yes, based on a single visit.
Right. One of the last times we spoke, if not the last time, discarded PPE was an issue right across the country. The focus seems now to be on disposable vapes that they're being seen by inspectors.
Well, we included them because we hear a lot from Tidy Towns groups and other volunteers who are out picking up the litter. We hear a lot about the presence, quite suddenly, of these disposable vapes. Now, so we included them. They were in 6% of the many hundreds of sites we surveyed. So, you know, that wouldn't be on a par now with other forms of litter, but we fear it may grow. And of course, there is the point that they're a particularly harmful form of litter because not only are they plastic, but they contain batteries, lithium batteries, which are toxic. So, you know, people need to be concerned about how these items are being disposed of.
Yeah, and coffee cups continue to be a problem.
I mean, the remnants of PPE, it's certainly disappearing. We don't see the masks anymore, unsurprisingly. We've seen a fall in the number of alcohol cans and bottles, though they're still present. But they're not nearly as present as coffee cups. So I think that behaviour has just sort of embedded itself of, you know, picking up a coffee and going for a stroll or whatever, a coffee on the go. And unfortunately, too many of these cups are ending up on our streets. And we're talking about a coffee cup levy. I think the Greens are keen to push that, but there seems to be infighting in government that's stopping that actually taking place. Right. But we do need to disincentivize coffee cups, you know, because, I mean, whether they're recyclable or compostable doesn't make a whole lot of difference when they're not being put in the proper receptacle anyway. And that's clearly happening based on the litter we're seeing.
All right, Connor, thanks very much for your time this morning. Connor Horgan of Irish Business Against Litter there. So mixed report for Letterkenny, which is the town that's surveyed in the county, which, of course, doesn't tell the whole picture of Donegal. It's clean, but failed to retain its top 10 spot. Now, in relation to the, pardon my ignorance, when they talk about the, where is it? The bus station, Letterkenny bus station. Is that the one just inside the entrance to the shopping centre, is it? Or is that across the road where the buses actually stop? I don't know, if I'm honest with you, because I'm not from Letterkenny, as you might be aware. But so what would you see as the Letterkenny bus station? It's probably pretty obvious to you. Right, OK, we were speaking last week to Hugh Harper, and you would know Hugh very tragically 9 months ago. He and Donna lost their beautiful daughter Leona in the Chrysler tragedy, and we had this email that came in afterwards. I feel compelled to contact you, having listened to the interview with Mr. Harper 9 months after the awful tragedy. My heart goes out to all the families. As a Chrysler resident living very close to the location of the tragedy, I am reminded daily of that awful day. I want to know why there is no communication as to what is going on with the investigation and what is happening in relation to the site. I think the families and community should have some kind of update. Now, I imagine the investigation is going to take as long as it's going to take, and that probably it is a very complex, very detailed, and one which has to be gotten right at the time of it being released. So I can understand perhaps why the investigation is still ongoing. As it relates in relation to what is happening to the site, I think that's the big question for Hugh and his family. And obviously this listener who lives close by also shares also shares that concern. Right. Now, James is on with us. Hi, James.
How are you doing, Greg?
I'm all right. You're commenting on the Ryan Tuberty payments.
I just want to rethink about it over the weekend. It suddenly struck me that that 330,000 plus, because we don't know the full figures yet, we'll take it at 330,000. That's over 30 years of payment to some individual on Dole Job Seekers Alliance, Job Seekers Benefit, a disability payment.
Yeah.
And when you look at it that way, and that's only his extra. That's nothing to do with his salary. Over 30 years, the average payment's around about 220 a week there on the social welfare and for an individual. And if you multiply that over, it's about 11,000 a year, multiplied by 30 years, you have 330,000. And that's only what we know of.
Mm-hmm. And as I you say, that's only that's the extra, that's the hidden payments, that's not his actual salary.
Aye. And I mean, the disgrace is that RTE was out with a begging bowl. Oh, we can't continue, even though they're getting license fee, most of it. They're getting advertising, and they're also getting, they had got a sort of bailout from the government as well. And for them to turn around saying, we've no money, but here's 300,000 plus. That, and again, I say, that's only what we know of. I think an awful lot more is going to come out and whenever these accounts are done like that.
And does it anger you, James? Or what's your emotion when you've heard this story?
Oh, very much so. Because I am involved in community work. Mm. And I work an awful lot for people with disabilities. And when you look at some of the situations that they're in, that 3,000, never mind 300,000, could make a big difference to their lives, and they're denied. It's like the we talked about it before, about the motorised transport grant was done away with to be replaced with a new, super, more inclusive payment. Never happened. The mobility allowance for new applicants never happened. And as I say, at 3,000 extra in the year, never mind 330,000, could make an awful big difference for many people with disabilities and for people as well, particularly rural dwellers that are living out in the country and trying to find work when there is none and maybe can't afford the transport of their own.
Mm.
So it's, angry. Now, I'm not that angry with Ryan Tuberty himself. I met him a couple of times, nice guy. He didn't submit false invoices to RTE. Yes, he should have come out and specified that their salary was wrong whenever it was published. But most people don't have to declare what their salary is. In Ireland here, I've often seen CEOs, and mind you, everybody's a CEO now, and they would even say that their salary is sacrosanct.
But just in relation to that, and I agree, and look, everyone's entitled to get what they can get. I mean, that's not the bottom line. But given the fact that for the last 5 or 6 years, the payments that he was receiving and others were receiving and were published in the newspapers and everyone would be aware of them, and given the fact that he's working with other staff who were on much less money than him but did actually take a pay cut, right, 15% pay cut, and then considering that in 2019 he said, you know, I'll never be found wanting is the phrase, isn't it, in terms of taking pay cuts if required. Given all of that and the fact that he didn't point out that there was an extra €75,000 resting in his account in the last couple of years and 20 and 30 and 20 in the years before, does and especially given the fact that he was the face of telling us what to do on behalf of the government, I'm not trying to have a pile on or to invoke personal criticism of it, but I think a more detailed and fulsome explanation from him would be useful, given his very important position, because he's just a normal person like you or I or anyone. But at the end of the day, though, when you're on that money and you're in that position, I think there's a higher sort of accountability requirement than there might be for you or I, James.
Oh, and I thought his comment was a wee bit arrogant, all right, and just sort of smiling myself there when you use that Father Ted speaking there, you know, resting on his account. Yeah, it certainly was. It was resting, very well hidden. And, you know, a pay cut obviously didn't apply to this extra money either. But he, no, I thought he was a wee bit arrogant with his response on it. He's putting all the blame on RTE. He hasn't done anything legally wrong.
No, of course not. No.
But morally wrong, yes.
And RTE look, probably haven't done anything legally wrong. I mean, maybe they broke some sort of a guideline or something. But look, now that Dee Forbes has mounted her horse and is riding off into the sunset, that's it. No one will be held accountable. That's the end of it, really. You know, no one can get sacked. No one. That's pretty. I mean, the story will rumble on. More will come out. But at the end of the day, everyone will point at each other like that old. There's a Spider-Man meme. Where everyone, you know, there's about 8 Spider-Mans pointing at each other. And that's exactly what this will be like. Everyone will point at each other. No one will, the person who was at the head has already departed. And that'll be it. It'll rumble on. People will get angry. And then it will die down. And we'll continue with the status quo once again. That is the life. That's what it's like here in Ireland.
That's the way things go on here. And if you got 3,000. Which maybe you shouldn't have got. They won't pass much heed on you, but 300,000, you're nearly a great man. I've heard people say fair play to him, took whatever he could off them, but it's the license fee player that's really paying about at the end of the day. And that, as you say, Greg, that's the usual thing here. Move on to see here. But yet and all, you have people there whose their partner or spouse dies, and if they're 1 week overpaid on social welfare, they're written to say you owe us. It could be just around about 250 to 300 euros. If they were paid one payment more or slightly more than one payment more before social welfare swung into action. I mean, there is an obligation on you to notify social welfare to discontinue a payment. And yet and all, and what's not social welfare having a role in this, although I think revenue will be looking fairly closely at Ryan's submissions from his company to ensure that money was declared.
I'm sure it is. It was paid through his agent and went into the company which he has with his mother and whatever. Listen, I mean, obviously these people become contractors because it is a way to not avoid, but you don't pay as much tax, right? So he creates a company, and all of them do as well, all of the top earners, and that company gets paid, and then there's deductibles and all that kind of stuff. But I've no doubt that all that money from Ryan Tuberty's side can be accounted for. It's just how the deal was done.
It's just a sobering thought, Greg, to think that here we are and the amount of time was taken up, and it might cost an absolute small fortune for a review report and all to be done on this. And as you say, right off onto the sunset with none, punishment maybe is too strong a word for it, but I do feel the board need to go as well.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Dee Forbes very critical of the board, but it's just, I don't know, like, do you think it'll ever change in that, you know, the people that dictate our lives to us to some extent, highly paid politicians, all on over 100,000, high paid civil servants. I mean, some of them are on 300,000, 250,000. They're the ones that, you know, tell us what to do, make the rules for us, decide our lives effectively. And then you have the people that deliver the news that are supposed to be, you know, holding these people to account. There's supposed to be openness and transparency. And as it turns out, they're incredibly highly paid, the people at the very, very top. And, you know, it's just murky. Again, it's another layer of murkiness in this country again. You know, I mean, where does it end? How long do we have to live? You know, many, many of us struggling. Yet the people that determine our fate, you know, they can do whatever they like. They're beyond reproach, and they just live in this ivory tower or whatever you might call it, looking down on us, dictating to us, telling us what to think. It's crazy.
Oh, those are the permanent staff. No, the Mandarin is there in the departments, and it is them that writes the speeches for a lot of the politicians and whatnot, and it is them that guide and shape policy. And you're absolutely right. They're never questioned, and if they do something particularly that people don't like, it's the politician that's blamed. But at the end of the day, politician blamed, then if he said it, he knows when he said it, put himself into the ring for a job like that, that yes, you will get a good salary, but if things go pear-shaped, you'll also carry the responsibility. But there again, as you said earlier, you bear the responsibility, but chances are you'll walk away scot-free.
All right, thanks, James, for your views. If you agree or disagree, 086 60 25 000. Right, we're going to try and unpack what happened in Russia over the weekend after we take this break. Stay right where you are. Okay, Professor Donika Obakhoin joins us on the programme now. Thank you very much for joining us, Professor.
Good morning, Greg.
It's good to have you on the programme. Right, I mean, in terms of things that happen on an international scale, a global scale, it was a remarkable series of events that we witnessed. You'd switch on the news or open Twitter and one thing appeared to be happening, and then you'd switch it on again and another thing. So I suppose let's try and get through this. What happened? Why did Yevgeny Prigozhin, the head of Wagner mercenary force, why did he turn on the Russian military leadership like he did?
Well, I think there's probably a clue in the title of Wagner, its full title. It's PMC. It's a private military operation. It's not coordinated by the state. It's not the property of the state. And in that sense, the contractual obligations of Wagner are to Yevgeny Prigozhin, not to the Russian state. And there's been a rivalry taking place, you know, for the duration of this invasion of Ukraine between the Minister of Defense, Sergei Shoigu, and Yevgeny Prigozhin. Yevgeny Prigozhin believes that all the Russian failures in Ukraine are because of incompetence at the top, and that Putin more or less should give more to him. And in his fight, he takes credit for any success that takes place, military success from a Russian perspective in Ukraine. And a kind of a key moment came earlier this month, which eluded many people, when the Russian Defense Ministry ordered the Wagner groups to sign contracts with the Russian government, with the Russian military defense. So, you know, this seems to have been brewing for some time. There is no way that they could have captured so much territory so quickly unless they had been planning this for quite some time. So despite the kind of cavalier approach that Yevgeny Prigozhin likes to cultivate, this was something that was planned. I mean, they covered 800 kilometers in a single day. You compare that to Russia's, you know, advance in Ukraine, where they were moving a few meters sometimes every day. I mean, this was a major attack on the Russian state, unprecedented, as Vladimir Putin himself said, since 1917.
And they were able to build up along the Russian border, it seems, some suggesting they've been doing it for months, roll in, take over Rostov with little to no, well, no, not a single bullet was fired, and then march up the N4, making, as you mentioned, amazing progress towards Moscow. What happened in such a short amount of time that could have ended this as it did? Now, I'm sure it's not over yet, and we'll tease that out, Donika, a little bit in a moment. But what could have been? I'm just thinking what the Wagner mercenaries are thinking themselves. I mean, they must follow Prigozhin to the letter of the law. It must, like, you know, to actually coordinate that, to turn everyone around, are they not scratching their heads wondering, well, why is he heading to Belarus? You know, so what do you think happened, and what do you think the reaction amongst the PMC might be?
Well, nobody knows what happened. Anybody that tells you otherwise is either, you know, woefully misinformed or selling a book, because there's a lot that's not known here. I mean, the idea that Prigozhin is going to, you know, eke out the rest of his life in Belarus is not plausible. Indeed, his existence in the future is not guaranteed. I mean, any security guarantee that you get from Vladimir Putin has to be taken with a grain of salt. I mean, he doesn't tolerate traitors, and he described Yevgeny Prigozhin as a traitor on Saturday on national television, declaring this kind of emergency situation. And, you know, you can sit for how he dealt with people like Skripal. He sent emissaries to London to poison him. Same with the Litvinenko. I mean, he eliminates rivals, he eliminates traitors. So, yeah, it's a very good question. I mean, why did Prigozhin bring his men all this way and then, you know, take them down the hill again? Certainly, there's a lot of unhappiness within Wagner for that reason. A lot of defections, a lot of people are leaving. It's not clear that Wagner as a separate organization has a future, despite the fact that it has tens of thousands of men in Africa propping up dictatorial regimes there. So there's all sorts of theories that have emerged that, you know, members of Prigozhin's family were threatened. Gary Kasparov, many people will know, the chess master, Russian oppositionist, always compares the Russian state to a mafia organization. He says, stop thinking of Russia as a normal state. Think of it like it is a mafia drama and, you know, essentially taking in family members and threatening them with all sorts of things. That's quite possible. It may have been just simply dividing up the spoils. I mean, we all get focusing on the war and think that this is a struggle just about how to prosecute the war in Ukraine. But, you know, Yevgeny Prigozhin is a remarkably wealthy man. Vladimir Putin's a remarkably wealthy man. All the people in the Russian elite, of which there are different factions, are wealthy people. This may have been about dividing up the spoils, and he may have been made an offer that was tempting enough for him to take away the troops. Because ultimately, it doesn't seem that he was, at least from the outside, looking for a coup. I mean, he doesn't seem to have had a plan to run Russia, so to speak. It was really all the time wanting to be heard. I mean, he was making all these social media pleas to Putin to get rid of Shoigu. And interestingly, Shoigu, the Minister of Defense, hasn't been heard for days now. And there are all sorts of rumors that he's going to be dispatched with, whether, you know, I imagine just maybe displaced. But there will be some kind of purge within the Russian elite in part to assuage Prigozhin, because even though Prigozhin's existence now is an embarrassment to Putin, it undermines his credibility as a dictator. He can't really just go and kill him because he would be a martyr. He proved to be quite popular during these few days. That's the very worrying thing if you're Vladimir Putin. How little resistance was put up. You know, this was an attack on the Russian state. It was an attack on Vladimir Putin's regime. And nobody came out in the streets saying stop. Nobody tried to push back Wagner, not even within the military. That must cause Vladimir Putin some loss of sleep.
Yeah, and what has changed too is that, I mean, the Russian people couldn't have been insulated from what was being claimed as it relates to the motivation for this war, the fact that Russian people were just being sent to their deaths effectively. You know, questioned every premise that Putin had for launching this in the first place. I presume that the public would have got wind of that. And also to, you know, what does someone else say? Right, well, if it's not going to be them, it could be us. You know, Putin is in a very vulnerable position at the moment, clearly, because obviously in terms of security from within, but also in terms of people probably seeing him as weak now. And even the public perhaps seeing him as weak. What's he doing?
Absolutely. No, this is going to be discussed around dinner tables in Russia for a long time to come, because, you know, who comes out as the decisive one as a result of the weekend's events? It's Yevgeny Prigozhin. I mean, he's the one who took the initiative. Vladimir Putin waited 24 hours to make a response. You can imagine they had already tanks protecting government buildings in Moscow and no public statement from Putin. You can imagine if this was Dublin or London or Washington, D.C., and there were tanks protecting government buildings, somebody would come out and make a statement. Putin waited. He vacillated, even though intelligence suggests that he knew that this was coming for at least 24 hours before it happened. And then it was Prigozhin who called it off. You know, Putin didn't make a statement. Lukashenko, it seems, intervened. So Putin looks like he doesn't have the initiative. He seems weak. He seems indecisive. He certainly doesn't seem to be in control. And that means that Russians today are thinking thoughts, I think, that they've never thought before during his presidency. And that's of a Russia without Putin. Because for it seemed brief, but I mean, if you were watching the media, as everybody was on Saturday, it seemed awfully like a long time as well. It seemed that it was a Russia without Putin, that the state was going to collapse. And it's very difficult to take yourself back from that feeling of vulnerability. The state no longer has a monopoly of violence, or certainly that Putin doesn't have a monopoly of violence. And that's going to, you know, as he's now more than 70 years old, he's not getting any older. And this is certainly not the legacy that he wanted to end with. It was a certain irony there that Saturday was the 16th month anniversary of his address to the Russian people on the invasion of Ukraine. And it was all about projecting Russian powers, about making Russia stronger. And here he is 16 months to the day, again addressing the Russian people, trying to tell them that the very state itself is in jeopardy. And of course, he's control over it as well.
Okay, and finally, just again, I can't figure out this Prigozhin thing, right? Because, like, What do his soldiers think now? I mean, he's off to Belarus, and I think there's some talk of him being able to retire in Africa or something. So who's going to pay their wages? What are they going to do? I mean, if they're absorbed into the Russian army, firstly, they were going to effectively could have been fighting against them. Now they're going to be fighting with them for much less money. Wagner also has interests in other countries. Who's leading them? I mean, what, again, and I kind of said this a little earlier on, but I mean, like, what a Prigozhin could face threats from within the Wagner group themselves. Presumably there are people within it think for themselves and go, well, what's going on here? What is he? What deal has he got? What happens to us?
Absolutely. And again, it's very much like a mafia situation there. It could simply dissolve and the Russian state could reassert itself. I mean, the Russian newspapers today, some opinionists or opinion columnists have been arguing that it was always a bad thing to outsource, an army, to have a private army in a state. I mean, the rationale behind Wagner was that it allowed the Russian state to do things that normal states generally aren't allowed to do, to send their troops abroad to openly, support dictators, to get resources from poor countries, things like that. And of course, with the invasion of Crimea in 2014, you remember those little green men with no insignia? That was Wagner. That's where Wagner first came onto the public consciousness for many people. So they were able to do things that, you know, the Kremlin could deny. They gave them this plausible deniability. But that has come back to boomerang them now. So what we might have, going back to your question about the future Wagner, is we might have kind of two Wagners in a way. We might have the Wagner in Ukraine more or less being incorporated into the Russian army, which was the desire certainly expressed by the Ministry of Defense and was the order given earlier this month. But we might have Wagner as a kind of foreign wing in places like Africa still existing, still under the control, perhaps, of Evgeny Prigozhin. This may have been part of the deal, because remember, nobody has really come forward and told us the details of this deal. All we know is that Moscow was under relentless siege and attack during the weekend. Indeed, the mayor of Moscow said today it was a non-working day because, again, it was not considered that this crisis would go away quickly. And now it has subsided. But what you can be sure of, this is a short-term fix. It's a long-term solution, not a long-term solution. Prigozhin is gone for the moment, but the problems remain.
So very, very finally then, what happens next? And this is crystal ball stuff, because obviously the Ukraine and the West will see the weakness here. They are in the midst of a counter-offensive, which they can accelerate and show a retreating Russian army. Tie that in with, you know, the almost panicked statement from Putin early Saturday morning and the deal that no one knows anything about. Like, how quickly do you think there could be another move on Putin or something that changes the path of this war that he might choose to do himself? He could perhaps claim some sort of a victory and say enough is enough. Like, well, how do you think this might play out over the few short weeks or months ahead?
Well, I think it's done irreparable damage to his reputation as a strongman within Russia and also within Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine is going to take advantage of this now that Russia is quite clearly unstable. I mean, Russia's difficulty will be Ukraine's opportunity. And I think it's demonstrated that Putin is actually, in practice, despite his rhetoric, very flexible with his beliefs. You might remember that throughout this war, people have been saying that, you know, Putin says that this is a red line that can't be crossed. So, you know, he has to be given what he wants. And what's demonstrated is that when he's faced with overwhelming force, he backs down. And that's what he did. I mean, he said it publicly that there would be a brutal put down of this rebellion, that there would be punishments and Yevgeny Prigozhin was a traitor. And by the end of the day, he completely backtracked on all of that. And I think there's a lesson that Ukrainians will take from that, and hopefully their Western partners, is that, you know, Putin responds to strength. I mean, he exploits weaknesses where he sees them. And that's, of course, why he invaded Ukraine and he's invaded other countries. But when faced with overwhelming military force and the odds against him, he does back down.
All right. Thanks so much for all your time this morning. Professor Donika Obakoin there, a professor of politics at UCD. Fascinating times, it has to be said. Okay. Now, you're welcome back to the show as we head towards the news at 10, which we'll have more details on what seems to be an emerging situation. There seems to be quite a significant Garda operation in the Schlieve League area of South Donegal, just north along the coast, or west along the coast, I suppose you would say, of Killybegs. We understand that a scene has been sealed off there, and we are investigating that situation. We'll bring it to you as we get the information, but there's definitely a significant situation in that area with a access being restricted to a particular point, tape up, and I believe the Rescue 118 helicopter has been dispatched as well. But as I say, stay with us. We'll bring you more details on that just as soon as we get it. Some of your comments on some of the stories we've been talking about this morning. Does this resignation loophole taken by civil servants need to be closed? I would say yes. I think we, as the taxpayer, deserve accountability. And if it can be avoided by simply resigning, there has to be consequences, doesn't there? Another, as its employer, why can't the Oireachtas refuse to accept D. Forbes' resignation until after any inquiry? But I forgot this is Ireland. I think we may be overreacting to the Ryan Tubridy debacle. I was in my local supermarket yesterday buying the Sunday paper. I remarked to the assistant, aged 18 or 19, about Tubridy's overpayment. She asked, who's he? It seems RTE and mainstream media are irrelevant to the young of Ireland. Yeah, indeed. And there was recent studies show that more and more of them are getting the news elsewhere. But that being said, this story is being delivered now to TikTok and other places. Young people are more likely to hang about. Greg, do you really think Ryan Tubridy was the only one getting these payments? I would doubt it. I don't know. Another, hi Greg, I've paid a TV licence for over 40 years. I won't be paying the next one. Can you let me know if the TV licence stamps can be cashed in at the post office, as I buy these and I can't afford a one-off payment every year, but I will never again pay the TV licence. I will go to jail if that be the case now, says one very passionate listener there. Another, let's not forget Ryan, through his shows on radio and TV, raised a lot of money and did great things for this country. Ireland is far too quick to seek ahead on a plate. Indeed, and I think that's been recognised. I don't see a great deal of criticism directed at Ryan Tubridy, if the truth be told, and I'm not certainly trying to create that either here. Yes, he did. That platform, The Late Late Show, did raise an awful lot of money for charity. Hi, Greg. Never seen anyone having an issue with RTE like you have. Why do Highland not release the wages of staff? Well, firstly, it's a private company. Secondly, we'd love it. I think we'd love it because there's an awful lot of people out there who think that because people in RTE get paid huge amounts of money, that we must as well. No, it's a completely different thing. It's a much smaller business, much smaller scale. I'm not Ryan Tubridy or Joe Duffy or any of those for that matter. I would be doing cartwheels for his extra payments that he didn't let on he was getting. Let me put it like that. I would be over the bloody moon. So it's a private company. So if they wanted to, they can. But I think there's I understand exactly where you're coming from. In terms of me having an issue with RTE, I don't actually really have an issue with RTE per se. I just think that some of the wages are astronomical, and I think it's a little bit unfair that people who sort of try and tell other people what to think are on so much money when the people they're speaking to are downtrodden and under the foot, so to speak. But anyway, I don't really actually have a problem with RTE. Maybe it comes across like that, but anyway, they're in the news at the moment. Bertie Dunnett, the leader of our country, and he's going to join the government again. Ireland is a laugh, says a listener there. Morning, Greg. I'm sick, so sick of the corruption in our country. I struggle to pay a TV licence every year. And why should I pay it when it is... why have I gone... My headphones have gone off. I'll have the back on again. I'll start reading that again. I couldn't hear myself. Greg, so sick of the corruption in our country. I struggle to pay a TV licence every year. Why should I pay when it's used to pay people over €500,000 in wages? The Irish people just sit back and take it. We need more men and women like Paddy Diver to get us motivated into protesting on the streets. Thank you, they say. Greg, cannot a case be made for the RTE that RTE really needs to be stood down since it is little more than a state monopoly enriching its own rich presenters and instead open up the marketplace to free competition and let smaller stations like Highland move into the Irish market? Well, we can't even move into South Donegal, for crying out loud, such is the way this country is set up. I'll tell you what I think, for what it's worth. I don't really have time to tell you what I think. I think RTE One TV and RTE Radio One definitely should be retained. I think other stations where there are commercial operations already operating in that space, I think that's a waste of your money personally. I think 2FM should be commercial only. It shouldn't be paid by license fees money because you've got so many iRadio here, Today FM. Do you know what I mean? It should be an equal competition playing field. But anyway, maybe we can tease that out a little more at another time. Back after the news and obituary notices.